भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय. Continue reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 17, odd title, The Victory of Hiranyaksha. Param Vijayate Hiranyaksha. And I think we ended with text 16, yes?
Yes.
So we're starting with text 17. The scene is from the previous chapter, the pregnancy of Diti at an inauspicious time. Rightly or wrongly, Kashyapa consented but let her know. Inauspicious time means inauspicious result. And demons will be born. And sure enough, at the end of the previous chapter, while Diti was pregnant, the whole universe became dark. And then the demigods in charge of everything in the universe, at least the necessities of life within the universe, went to their authority, Lord Brahma. Help! What's going on? And he explained what's going on and said Lord Vishnu will take care of it. So this chapter begins, 17, demigods were pacified. Not that the darkness all of a sudden the light went on, but they knew what was they had knowledge. And they had shelter of Lord Vishnu through the confirmation of their authority. And then Prabhupada discusses the nature of divine demoniac. Very simple. Divine quality, or the demigods, they accept authority. And they hear from authority, and that's their shelter. And the demoniac don't accept authority, and they don't have shelter. And they have another interest. They have another paradigm or lens that they look at existence and life through. And so the birth of Hiranyaksha in Hiranyakashipu is described. Interesting. It's a detail, but Hiranyaksha was born first but conceived second. Hiranyakashipu was conceived first and born second. But Hiranyakashipu was considered the elder brother. So, the two were born, and inauspicious signs, details and details and details. The whole universe was distressed at these inauspicious omens, and the two began to grow. And it describes the things that they are interested in and their cultivation. And text 16 says, these two demons who appeared in ancient times began to exhibit uncommon bodily features, semicolon, they had steel-like frames, which began to grow just like two great mountains. Text 17. Their bodies became so tall that they seemed to kiss the sky with the crests of their gold crowns. They blocked the view of all directions. We read this.
Till
19. Okay. Okay, so they're macho guys. Okay, so the elder child, Hiranyakashipu, was unafraid of death. We read read 19 also?
Yeah, 20.
Starting with 20, okay. From anyone within the three worlds because he received a benediction from Lord Brahma, yes. He was proud and puffed up, which sounds the same, due to this benediction, and was able to bring all three planetary systems under his control. Text 20. His younger brother, Hiranyaksha, was always ready to satisfy his elder brother by his activities. Hiranyaksha took a club on his shoulder and traveled all over the universe with a fighting spirit just to satisfy Hiranyakashipu. Purport. The demoniac spirit is to train all family members to exploit the resources of this universe for personal sense gratification, whereas the godly spirit is to engage everything in the service of the Lord. Hiranyakashipu was himself very powerful, and he made his younger brother, Hiranyaksha, powerful to assist him in fighting with everyone and lording over material nature as long as possible. If possible, he wanted to rule the universe eternally. These are demonstrations of the spirit of the demoniac, living entity. Text 21. Hiranyaksha's temper was difficult to control. He had anklets of gold tinkling about his feet. He was adorned with a gigantic garland, and he rested his huge mace on one of his shoulders. His mental and bodily strength, as well as the boon conferred upon him, made him proud. Doesn't give details about the boon conferred upon him. He feared death at the hands of no one, and there was no checking him. The gods, therefore, were seized with fear at his very sight, and they hid themselves, even as snakes hide themselves for fear of Garuda. Purport. The Asuras are generally strongly built, as described here, and therefore their mental condition is very sound, and their prowess is also extraordinary. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, having received the boon that they would not be killed by any other living entity within this universe, were almost immortal, and thus they were completely fearless. Text 23. On not finding Indra and the other demigods, who had previously been intoxicated with power, the chief of the Daityas, seeing that they had all vanished before his might, roared loudly. After returning from the heavenly kingdom, the mighty demon, who was like an elephant in wrath for the sake of sport, dived into the deep ocean, which was roaring terribly. On his entering the ocean, the aquatic animals who formed the host of Varuna were stricken with fear and ran or swam far away. Hiranyaksha showed his splendor without dealing a blow. Purport. Materialistic demons sometimes appear to be very powerful and are seen to establish their supremacy throughout the world. Here also it appears that Hiranyaksha, by his demoniac strength, actually he established his supremacy throughout the universe, and the demigods were afraid of his uncommon power. Not only were the demigods in space afraid of the demons, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, but also were the aquatic animals within the sea. Text 26. Moving about in the ocean for many, many years, the mighty Hiranyaksha smote the gigantic wind-tossed waves again and again with his iron mace and reached Vibhavari, the capital of Varuna. Purport. Varuna is supposed to be the predominating deity of the waters, and his capital, which is known as Vibhavari, is within the watery kingdom. Text 27. Vibhavari is the home of Varuna, lord of the aquatic creatures and guardian of the lower regions of the universe, where the demons generally reside. There, Hiranyaksha fell at Vruna's feet like a low-born man, and to make fun of him, he said with a smile, "Give me battle, O Supreme Lord." Purport: the demoniac person always challenges others and tries to occupy others' property by force. Here, these symptoms are fully displayed by Hiranyaksha, who begged war from a person who had no desire to fight. 28. "You are the guardian of the entire sphere and a ruler of wide fame, having crushed the might of arrogant and conceited warriors, and having conquered all the Daityas and Danavas in the world. You once performed a Rajasuya sacrifice to the Lord. Thus, mocked by an enemy whose vanity knew no bounds, the worshipful Lord of the waters waxed angry. But by dint of his reason, he managed to curb the anger that had sprung up in him, and he replied, 'O dear one, we have now desisted from warfare, having grown too old for combat.'" Purport: as we see, warmongering materialists always create fighting without reason. Text 30. "You are so skilled in war that I do not see anyone else but the most ancient person, Lord Vishnu, who can give satisfaction in battle to you. Therefore, O chief of the Asuras, approach him, whom even heroes like you mention with praise." Purport: aggressive materialistic warriors are actually punished by the Supreme Lord for their policy of unnecessarily disturbing world peace. Therefore, Varuna advised Hiranyaksha that the right course to satisfy his fighting spirit would be to seek to fight with Vishnu. And then the last verse of the chapter, we're done with the chapter. Varuna continued, "On reaching him, you will be rid of your pride at once and will lie down in the field of battle surrounded by dogs for eternal sleep. It is in order to exterminate wicked fellows like you and to show his grace to the virtuous that he assumes his various incarnations like Varaha." Varaha isn't mentioned in the Sanskrit various forms. Anugraha, to show his grace. Purport: Asuras do not know that their bodies consist of five elements of material nature, and that when they fall, they become objects of pastimes for dogs and vultures. Varuna advised Hiranyaksha to meet Vishnu in his boar incarnation so that his hankering for aggressive war would be satisfied and his powerful body would be vanquished. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 17th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled "Victory of Hiranyaksha over all the directions of the universe." Say it again. "Victory of Hiranyaksha over all the directions of the universe." So during this visit we covered a whole chapter. How's that? The purports are not lengthy. That's one of the reasons. But as we've been discussing, the under undergraduate study Bhagavad Gita describes divine and demoniac nature, and the Bhagavatam expands the graduate study literature in the form of histories. And they complement one another very nicely. And specifically, to echo something that we've been speaking of over the evening programs, the qualities of the Supreme Lord, 64 in number, and of course, unlimited, totally. The qualities or the characteristics of the Supreme Lord are unlimited, and they're the source of everything else, where there's a quality in this world. And the Lord's qualities serve as stimulations for ecstatic love. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam is such a literature, it not only like, okay, it's true what Bhagavad Gita says, see this and see this. So it's not just a rubber stamp kind of literature or an explanatory literature. It's an ecstatic literature. It's absorption in Srimad Bhagavatam is a stimulation for ecstatic love. It's the characteristics and qualities and pastimes and forms, activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees, so equally so both, are stimulations for ecstatic love. Just like our process of Krishna consciousness, there's the primary activity, the Yuga Dharma of chanting the holy name, and the Yuga Dharma of the chanting of the holy name does many things. It cleanses. We discussed this yesterday evening. Bhava Mahada Vagni Nirvapanam. It extinguishes the blazing forest fire of material existence. But it doesn't stop there. It indicates Swaropena Vyavastati. Just a little review of what we did yesterday. Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, where Krishna is describing the nature of samadhi. Prabhupada explains that the chanting of the holy name takes one in those first two to the position of nirvana, what is popular in the world today, Buddhist world at least, is nirvana, that's cessation of material existence. So what do you do there? What's on the other side of cessation of material existence? What's it like? And then the Bhagavatam teaches us, and Lord Chaitanya teaches us, and the chanting of the holy name has the potency to take us to that realm that's beyond nirvana. Keep chanting. Of course, we're still on the, you know, Chaita Dharpana Marjanam part, a whole bunch. And it takes diligence, not just time. It's not a clock-punching performance. It's a consciousness performance of bringing our consciousness to Krishna in the form of His holy name. And, very nicely, the Srimad Bhagavatam complements. It stimulates the ecstatic love of one whose tendency to serve Krishna has become awakened and cleansed, like polishing a diamond. And as the diamond starts to sparkle, is that all we're supposed to do? Just like sparkle? Or twinkle? Just exist in this cessation of material existence space? I can't help, as I'm speaking this, I can't help but share. In July, for a good part of the month of July and early part of August, I'll be in China. And to harmonize with what this new wonderful leader of China has said that the government accepts, which means if you don't do what the government accepts, you get spanked, you're in trouble. The government accepts whatever it is that promotes, resonates with Chinese culture, traditional Chinese culture, rah-rah traditional Chinese culture. So traditional, I spent some time learning culture, not just dance and music, but the teachings of the great personalities that are lauded in, within China. What did they teach? It's a way of life. And the way of life is devoid of God, naturally. But they're teaching a way of life. And the way of life that they describe is a good way of life. It represents how a cultured person conducts themselves. There's a problem, however. There's a few problems. There's no God in the picture. And so how do you sustain culture without God in the picture? It's not sustainable. However, they want to promote, because my goodness, consider the population of China in the space that China occupies. There's a lot of people in China. You put all those people together and shake the bag, and you're going to have conflicts. So how do you get, if you're going to have a godless culture, how are you going to reduce the conflict? The government's going to have a headache. So they need to promote culture. They need to promote Chinese culture coming from these people. Confucius and Lao Tzu and the whole long list of them. And of course there's different, all kinds of different versions and varieties, etc. That's just natural modes of nature over time. But there's principles. So those principles are amplifying the divine nature and speaking, in a refined language about the demoniac nature. And not being smug about it or condescending about it, just being truthful about it. So how to take that, this divine and demoniac nature topic of Bhagavad Gita, and elevate it to that which is sustainable. That's like the mission of the devotees that are presenting Krishna consciousness in China, at least in sympathy with and not in conflict with the governmental views of what's acceptable in China today. So naturally, Krishna has to come out of the box. And how to do that is part of the strategy. But, in the West, what do we do with persons that are, the God word is like not okay, because with it comes so many connotations. So what do you do? And I don't need to expand on that, but it's an important principle, and to contemplate how to reach people in a way that is relatable and comfortable, and then ever so gently bring them to Krishna. And then even as you're ever so gently bringing them to Krishna, that requires lots of refinement too. Even if you identify the source of everything as a person, and you say yes. You say, yes, I'm an eternal soul. Yes, I'm part of the Supreme Eternal. Yes, that Supreme Eternal is a person, and I'm a person, I have a relationship with him. And then there's more and more refinement. introducing Krishna consciousness to the world has its challenge, and the refinement process has its challenge. That it takes faith, and it takes commitment, it takes a desire to reach that destiny, being clear what the goal is, and taking steps towards the goal, and continuing to make steps towards the goal, rather than becoming complacent. Because the goal is clear, and I want to reach the goal, not just nirvana. You know, the suffering being reduced, and that's good enough for me. And then you slacken, and then you're back into the suffering zone, because it's the nature of how the system works, the material energy. It's meant to bring us to the position of restoring our loving relationship with Krishna. That's the goal. And not everybody wants to take that pill or have that prasadam. So the Bhagavatam, even if people have a wrong conception, not even. In the beginning, everyone has a wrong conception. But the Bhagavatam is so powerful that we can make it available to people that have wrong conceptions, and it acts like, especially in combination with chanting of the holy name, it helps improve their ability to appreciate, become stimulated towards the goal. Some people will be turned off. Oh, look at, you know, mythology. So we introduce Bhagavad Gita first to people that have their faith is minimal. At the same time, the pastimes of Krishna, like just another little anecdotal thing. It was a big surprise throughout the Hare Krishna movement when Prabhupada came out with Krishna book. Because prior to that, he had said over and over and over and over and over, preparing his neophyte devotees that didn't know anything about anything, that you don't go right to the 10th canto. And the unscrupulous katha people, they go right to the 10th canto, and specifically they go to the Rasa Lila section of the 10th canto, the Gopi Gita section of the 10th canto, and people that don't even understand ABC, they like, and that's their notoriety. It's unscrupulous. We progress through the cantos again and again, and so many forms and fashions of that message. Then he came out with Krishna book, and we had the lovely assignment of distributing Krishna book by the thousands. And that was the book we had. It was an interesting chapter. I'm sure some of you have read about it. And, you know, scratching our heads saying, why is Prabhupada doing this when he said that? Now he's doing this. And then the other was, how are these people going to accept? You know, because of the cover, big letters, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there's Radha Krishna. People would look at the picture. Who's that? That's God. No. Here's your book back. You can't look like that. Why you can't look like that? Well, he can't look like that, that's all. So, it was not for the purpose of confronting, but our founder Acharya had this his wish explicitly before his passing. He didn't know if he would be able to complete through the 10th canto, and sure enough he wasn't, and so he wanted to leave behind him an approachable picture of the 10th canto that scrupulous people, not the unscrupulous ones, could get an understanding of 10th canto properly. And so it's presented in such a way summary study way that made it even the worldly audience could understand. If they were a little sincere, they could understand. If they're critical people, that's another story. But for sincere, wanting to know kind of people, and stimulate their attraction for Krishna, because his pastimes are all attractive. So back to Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they're illustrating the demoniac spirit. There's the divine. We heard from the previous chapter and beginning of this chapter the position of the demigods. They're not God-fearing, they're God-loving. And they see him as a principle of surrender. They see him as their place of protection and shelter. Doesn't mean because they're demigods, doesn't mean that they don't have fear. They described fear before, now there's fear again. And their fear was the loss of the temporary. I spoke on this topic, fear and fearlessness, at the Detroit Temple on Sunday. It's the strongest of the animal propensities. So, what to speak of us, even the demigods have, because when there's shelter in the temporary, and the temporary is at risk, whatever that temporary might look like in the mind, the body or position or contentment or stability, but the world isn't stable. This, besides its Kali Yuga and it's getting worse, its very nature is it's impermanent. It's always moving. Time energy is moving in it, and it's moving. And we take shelter of something that's moving, and we want it to stay the same? Sorry, Charlie. It's not going to stay the same. And then there's fear, because we don't know what's next. So to not have to address the fear, we turn our attention somewhere. There was a little bit of our discussion yesterday. I feel threatened. And so we do different things to deal with that feeling that's too uncomfortable. And the real solution is to take shelter of that which is unchanging. Nasate vijite bhavo no bhavo vijite sataha. That's what the Tattvadarshis do. They don't place so much value in the temporary. They place value in the eternal. You deal with the temporary in a responsible, reasonably, investing time, energy in the temporary for the satisfaction of the eternal, supreme Krishna. And don't forget Krishna while doing that. And if you forget Krishna while doing that, because that's common, you forget Krishna while doing that, exactly the verse that we discussed from Bhagavatam on Sunday, you forget who you are, you forget the Supreme, the illusory potency, Maya, covers the living entity, and it's just this bitter struggle. Daiviyeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Exactly as our undergraduate study, Bhagavad Gita, tells us. So what to do? Take shelter of the divine nature. Understand what it is. So there's the behaviors and the qualities, but the behaviors and qualities flow from a Krishna conscious perspective, not from Confucius and Lao Tzu. Now, their teachings are powerful, so it there's no harm. It's good. We discussed this also previously. The things that are mind control and sense control things, they're very helpful, but they're not the basis and support of staying in that configuration. of mode of goodness, divine life. It's shelter in the personality of Godhead. So, mamanusmara yudhyacha. Mind goes to Krishna. And how does the mind go to Krishna? As a servant of Krishna. It's our nature. I find it much easier to be energized by service than just being a yogi. Get the mind fixed on Krishna. Service. That's energizing. Serving Krishna, serving the holy name, and then serving the Bhagavatam's message as the energizer behind even serving the mission. And then one's life is, somebody sent to me, so I forwarded it to a group of people, some statement that Prabhupada made in Los Angeles, appealing. I'm old, and he didn't elaborate. It was a very short statement. My one request is that the legacy that I have created for giving Krishna consciousness to others, that you carry it on. And began sobbing or weeping. Thank you very much. So the mission is not just like meeting new people and then taking care of new people. That's the tip of the spear, and then how do you take care of people? You know, devotee care and everything else with it evolving in community development and the social needs and everything. As part of taking care of the souls who are on their, have made a commitment to go on the path to Krishna. And then our own internal work of realigning ourselves to the goal, because it's really easy to get distracted by the things that are, as we were discussing the other day, are false shelters. We go over there. And we go over there, like the mind when chanting goes so many places. So we have this nice picture of the mind and demoniac nature. We know it's not a difficult choice in principle, just have to guard against the demoniac nature, because in Kali Yuga it's within both. Both are within. Tendency towards and tendency towards. That's our situation. So we guard against the other one and we go for the divine nature. Mamanusmara. Remembering Krishna. And the Bhagavatam helps us. It stimulates the ecstatic position of loving Krishna, serving Krishna, because he's so wonderful, and feeling protected from those distractions and false shelters. There's work that we have to do, but Krishna will help. That's the reassurance, the position of Mahasuchaha. Any discussion? Yeah.
So I was thinking about how you said about fear. because we are taking shelter in temporary, we're fearful. But I was also thinking about relationships. In one sense, relationships are also temporary. But we place a lot of shelter. Take a lot of shelter in our relationships. So I was trying to reconcile that, because that's encouraged.
Yes. natural. Say it stronger. We wouldn't be alive. Prabhupada's teaching in the Bhagavatam. The objective is not have no relationships, because it leads to problems. It is temporary. So don't get into relationships. Have no relationships. That's not our teaching. That's impersonalism. So the solution or the encouragement is having soul-to-soul relationships with Krishna at the center. That's in that whole little section of Queen Kunti's prayers. Prabhupada explained it very shortly, very succinctly, how to spiritualize our relationships. And it's not like fudge it. It's with, eventually at least, heading towards clarity. So that, you know, there's the, what you could say, the duty part. Let's just say, you know, mother-child. There's the duty part of the mother, but it's not without affection. And the affection is natural. It's not like ducks and squirrels and dogs and cats. They don't go to family counseling and learn how to take care of their dependents. It's already there. So the human form of life is meant to take that which is built within, tendency for relationships, towards the soul and ultimately super soul and satisfying Krishna. So that's how this natural inclination for relationships should be directed. It's very important. So it's not a matter of refinement of the external only. It's keeping the goal and aligning the natural tendency for relationships, because we're persons, towards the goal, that is pleasing Krishna. That's bhakti. So devotion, the relationships with Krishna at the center. You know, it's an easy thing, it rolls off the tongue very easily, and how to do it is another thing. But it is important. And the refinements are important of how we hear from one another and how we express ourselves to one another, how we behave towards one another, you know, the social structure within the family and within the community and within the organization. We're not very cultured people. So the culture aspect is not unimportant. The relationships are not unimportant. They are important. And being clear what the goal is most important. More?
And so if we do that, then we can also overcome the fear of losing the relationship.
Sure. Yes. Yes. I chose this topic to speak in Detroit because within the past while, couple weeks, the topic came up multiple times, fear of loss of relationships. And, you know, so when you're gripped with fear, it's really hard to listen to reason. Fight or flight. And then some people say, it's with me all the time. And they elaborate on what their experience is. So it's not easy to overcome. It's the strongest of the animal propensities. So how do you get on the other side of it? It's both. Ultimately, take shelter of Krishna and you're on the other side of it. But But to get to the other side, to get to the taking full shelter of Krishna, the other side of it is more than notional. It's a lot of work because there's obstacles due to attachments to the temporary or the false shelters that we have. So we have to recognize the false shelters as false shelters. You know, the sense of happiness that comes from the configuration of the temporary today. And we want it to stay, and it's not going to stay, and then in Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti, chapter 25, he says, every learned person knows that attachment to that which is temporary is the source of suffering. However, it's the same attachment to one who is a sadhu is liberating. So that's a big help. More than a big help. It's really important to have that association to carry us beyond, because her issue is her husband's gone after tens of thousands of years. That's a long time. And her attachment is now not just anticipated, it's real, he's gone. So how to get on the other side of that feeling? The time sequence is different, but the principle is the same. So it's devotional service. And devotional service is assisted by, it's made more accessible by association with sadhus. Sadhu Sangha. You have something? Yeah.
It's related, but it's a little not like from the class directly. This definition of enthusiasm, when Srila Prabhupada says enthusiasm, he defines enthusiasm as endos executed with intelligence.
Yes.
And Krishna consciousness.
Yes. That's a nice definition.
And it feels like very packed up, and I was wondering if you can give a little more elaboration on what does it mean by
well, that. Intelligence, in that case, means that which Krishna gives to Tesham Satyata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. That kind. Dadami Bodhi Yogam Tam Yena Mama Ubiyanti. That kind of intelligence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it a little differently, but it's the same message. Enthusiasm cannot be sustained without a spiritual conception. Enthusiasm without a spiritual conception is passion, and passion wanes, and something else takes over. Now, some people are like non-stop passionate, but even passion wanes, and passion has its byproduct of frustration. So, to sustain enthusiasm requires a spiritual conception, and buddhi is just like chapter 2, text 41, this buddhi yoga topic is being introduced by Krishna after having explained Sankhya. So Sankhya is not just acknowledging I'm spirit soul. We will all agree with that. No one here is going to disagree with that. But then how to act in that consciousness, that's buddhi. That's the intelligence that's spoken of in that verse. My understanding, anyway. Activity directed by that kind of buddhi, that kind of intelligence, how to reach Krishna. And even if, you know, the light's not fully bright, it's just kind of, you know, the morning rising of the sun kind of light. Still, if you're even in the beginning stages, stay on track with that, and that's then enthusiasm can be sustained. How to reach Krishna consciousness. And it's essential for successful bhakti.
like one of the things that I was thinking and wanted to clarify, like this thinking, feeling, and willing, that the actions in one sense are, there's a
sequence.
But the feelings are something that, like how Prabhupada said, that I don't, like, there's the question of faith. You chant because you've been asked to chant. So is that something related with that, that the intelligence is the instruction of the master? So I may not have feeling, but I don't worry so much about whether I have feeling or not.
Well, there's feeling in the sense that I have trust in the instruction and the instructor. So, little seeking clarity on the question. Thinking, feeling, willing. And in the feeling department, your question is directing those feelings towards the goal of Krishna consciousness? No, what's your question?
It's like, when you're trying to cultivate one particular aspect, then we have to navigate through feelings. And then
we have to which some feelings?
Navigate through. Navigate,
feelings. Okay.
And then it's like, it's not the criteria that today I feel like doing it, so I do it, and I don't feel like doing, or my feelings are telling me to do something else. But then the instruction is there, so I take shelter of the instruction.
Yes.
And in that sense,
that's intelligence.
I'm aware of the feeling, but I'm understanding that.
Yes.
About sustained enthusiasm.
Yes.
So the endeavors are not like, when I'm in a purified state, my feelings would be aligned.
Yes.
So then my feelings would be the impetus for endeavor. But when I'm not...
No, not necessarily. The impetus for endeavor, it's just in alignment with the endeavor.
Okay. So, but right now I'm aware of the limitation of that because the thinking is and feeling is misdirected. Yeah.
Because we're covered, we have conceptions that happiness looks like this. Mm-hmm. And I want to do what happiness looks like because I want to be happy. So the tendency is to follow the mind. And it is necessary to do as you're saying, navigate the emotion, the feelings, and choose to just park some and just, tell the mind, my dear mind. Shanti, I'm not going to do what you say. And why? Well, intelligence is directing otherwise. And one of the topics I'm going to be speaking about during the Festival of Holy Name is, the second class is going to be on this, and that is the specific to chanting, there's the giver of the name, and that's Lord Chaitanya. Now, the name is eternal, but it was his instruction, do it, chant. So, with the instruction comes mercy. And therefore, chanters need to reach out to the instructor. So that's also intelligence. It's recognizing I have misguided emotions, misguided long, who knows, goals of life, goal of life of temporary enjoyment and of Krishna's assets, and that's a strong tendency. So I'm not going to act on that. This lifetime, I'm going to act on this. But there's a struggle. So to get beyond, I'm doing more than what you said, which your question, which is there's the duty part until we're at the spontaneous stage. There's the sadhana stage where we do because we're told to do. Lord Chaitanya said, chant. And the disciplic succession says chant. And so with that instruction comes power to overcome things of this world, attachments to the world. It takes faith to continue to do that. And Krishna gives, among other things, he gives intelligence to those who do that. And it starts to grow, the intelligence. And then as it starts to grow, the chaita dharpana marginam, the mind becomes cleansed. And those pushings manasa vegam, the pushings of the mind, become diminished. Not only we tolerate them, that's the beginning stage, but they come into alignment. So how do you get the alignment? Well, it takes spiritual work. Until that spiritual work is refined and well honed, there's vigilance, as you're very fastidious about, not just, you know, recognizing what are the forces acting internally and selecting out certain ones. That's intelligence, the spiritual intelligence. That's Krishna helping you on the path to Him. And you can't do it alone. So therefore this calling of mercy and from the giver of bhakti. That's our namo mahavadanyaya Krishna prema pradayate. Prabhupada translates that as He's freely giving devotional service. It's the word is he's freely giving Krishna prema pradayate. But Prabhupada translates it as He's freely giving devotional service. That's within the Chaitanya Charitamrita section that's describing freely distributing the fruits of. He doesn't say love of God. He's distributing the fruits of love of God, but in the form of devotional service. The mind. The restless mind. Anything else? Yeah.
To these two questions, Maharaj, you mentioned from that section where Kapila is speaking to Devahuti.
Yeah.
And just after that verse, there's a verse about how devotional service is sufficient to burn away our subtle body.
Yes, that's the next verse.
Digestion.
Yes. So,
but I've noticed a tendency in the devotee culture to turn towards other things to alleviate the swelling in the subtle body, the pain from the subtle body, and so I'm trying to learn what is the place for those things, if they have one, or maybe they lend to what you're just discussing with Matha, so could you say something about that?
Yeah. I've contemplated that topic a whole lot for some of the same reasons. And the conclusion I've reached, at least directional, not necessarily conclusion, the direction is say three things. One is, without firmly rooted faith in the bhakti process, it's not advisable. Because then that can be one shelter, another false shelter. Because false shelters aren't going to get you to where you want to go. And second is, in the holistic marketplace, not even spiritual marketplace, but holistic marketplace, there's all kinds of things that are, they're quacks. The people that just unqualified, and therefore receiving those things from a qualified person then is imperative. And the third is well, it's kind of connected to the first one, but my position has become, I accept that those things can be helpful, you know, provided it's clear that's all it's for. It's like going to an Ayurvedic doctor or going to a doctor. You know, all you need is the holy name. You're not the body prabhu and, you know, all those things. But we go to doctors because, you know, then finding a qualified doctor. That's good. You know, good luck. And, you know, not just a caring doctor or somebody that knows a lot, but somebody that, you know, is gifted by Krishna to heal. Some people have gifts and some people don't. So we do that, although you know, we're not the body, etc., etc., we're not the mind. But so, is there a place? I've accepted that there's a place, provided those things mentioned. And it's just, it's not, you know, it's not a means unto itself. It's to assist, to the degree that it can assist the bhakti process, it can be accepted. Anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam. We accept those things that are favorable to bhakti. Is it favorable to bhakti? Well, if it takes one's faith away from the bhakti process and over to something else, it's unfavorable to bhakti. It's not necessarily the thing unto itself, it's the consciousness behind the shelter taker. So if the deliverer is someone that is, because I'm just, I came in contact, without keeping it short, there's an Ayurvedic doctor that I've begun to listen to, because this Ayurvedic doctor has a whole series of recordings, and many of the things that this Ayurvedic doctor says in these recordings is the same thing that Prabhupada said. And of course, I have faith in Prabhupada. But, you know, without giving, for example, this and that, I'm confident it's going to help my health. And the purpose of health is not just so I can be healthy, but it'll help my service. It's real easy to get into, I want to be healthy because I'll feel better. And I don't like to feel bummer. I like to feel good. But, you know, so the consciousness, these things, these modality things, including medicine, including Ayurveda and homeopathy, they can be, without having medical care, then your body can't serve properly, besides the pain and whatever are the other difficulties. So, similarly, the weakness of heart is we take shelter of other things. You know, just go back to Uma's question, you know, relationship. We take shelter of relationship because we're social beings. We don't want to be alone. We want relationships. And so we can take shelter of relationships and say all kinds of things that's not really the spiritual dimension of relationships. It's real easy. 1, 2, 3. A case in point, just on your topic, this weekend that we spent in Gita Nagari with Bir Krishna Maharaj in non-violent communication. That wasn't the title of it, but that was the theme, and it's just refining relationships, but, you know, for what purpose? For the Krishna conscious, hopefully, for the Krishna conscious purpose. So, should we not get into, but it's right in Bhagavad Gita. Austerity of speech, 17:15, Bhagavad Gita. So how do you do it? So there's a seminar on how to do it. And the authority from which that subject matter came was not a Hare Krishna devotee, not a Krishna bhakta. So maybe we shouldn't take from that place. But so it takes a really qualified person to take gold from a filthy place, as the saying goes. So leave behind all the absence of Krishna, and Krishna is there. Because the principles are in Bhagavad Gita. So is there a place for it? There's a place for it. The deliverer, the physician, has to be very qualified. Qualified in primarily Krishna consciousness and secondarily in knowing the subject matter thoroughly, properly. Then go there is okay. Now, is it possible that some people that attended that seminar or just take the material aspects and not the Krishna aspect? Sure. At different stages, we're going to do different things and assimilate different things. So that let the those things can be helpful in ultimately in our spiritual relationship with one another. Communicate in a manner that Krishna speaks of. So what I did, at least what I tried to do, is take the message of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Chaitanya, Krishna, and their features of compassion, and the teachings of compassionate speech, and how does it work, and where it's not right, and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So it puts puts a spiritual dimension in the package of how to communicate effectively, compassionately. It has its place. Have to be careful, but we have to be careful anyways. Yeah.
You mentioned the spiritual dimensions before also with Chinese culture.
Yeah.
And though we're practicing the bhakti yoga process under the shelter of a spiritual master,
yeah,
the spiritual dimension can, for me, often feel like karma yoga, which feels contrary to bhakti, even though we're externally following the bhakti process. So, is that the case? That because we're practicing in kind of a dutiful mode?
Well, it depends on the consciousness behind. And that a lot depends upon your faith, like what's the goal and striving towards the goal, and then in addition, self-honesty. This is where I am. It's like her question about duty. We chant because we're told to chant, not because we have some spontaneous attraction. No, some persons here may have. Or to all of us may have some degree of attraction, but we have a lot of the other, you know, attraction to the temporary and identification with all of that and happiness is and life is, configuring things in such a way I feel comfortable. So that's the self-honesty factor. So it may feel like, but it doesn't mean the principle is held to that standard. And then the second message is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teaching is, we should always be progressive. We should be honest with our position, and we should always be progressive, because otherwise we'll stay stuck. And then that's where the nomenclature comes. This is Karma Yoga, for example. Because that's the level that I am, and that's how I see where I am, and I'm stuck. So we can be at this level, but it's not. There's many places in Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada equates the two, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, uses them interchangeably, because it's a stage, or it's a dimension, it's an aspect of. So for you, you may have that feeling. This is this emotion thing, question that was asked. Recognize and strive to go further with taking shelter that I'm doing this in order to get to the place where my life is simply for the pleasure of Krishna. That's the bhakti principle. So you're doing your bhakti exercises. And it's the right frame to do the bhakti exercises, and the most important thing is the bhakti exercise along with you. The other part is It's to help get there. It creates an atmosphere that's conducive. It's an incubation chamber, a bhakti incubation chamber. But it's an element of bhakti, because a pure bhakta follows regulations. Even they're on the spontaneous stage for the purpose of shedding example for others. It's right in Bhagavad Gita. It's in Rupa Goswami's teachings as well. You have something?
Thank you for the question. My question was how complacency, how we can safeguard against complacency in
our watch out.
Practice.
Know that it's a tendency and watch out. Be vigilant. It's experience is a good teacher. And according to Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna says is true. In the beginning, we want something. And so we go to Krishna because we want something. And you get that something, and then complacency. The impetus is now gone because the wanting has been satisfied. That's complacency. I'm comfortable. I like being comfortable. So it's not a relationship, it's I want something. And then it gets difficult again, and the complacency, you know, is left behind, and we get, you know, interested again. So the lesson, life gives this lesson, I need to change the purpose of why. The what doesn't need to change, but it's like this karma yoga question. The why has to change. And the why is, well, what goes in its place? You know, I want to be in a relationship with Krishna. My life is meant, human life is meant for that. The soul is so, you just cultivate the spiritual conception. The spiritual conception is through the medium of bhakti. Krishna's pleasure is everything. Not the regulation is everything. Krishna's pleasure is everything. That's bhakti. That I do for that, I cultivate that purpose. That then service mood, where's complacency? Krishna, service to Krishna is everywhere in everything. Otherwise, I have no interest in it. So there are things we just have no interest in because Krishna bhakti isn't there. Unless it's to go to give Krishna consciousness to somebody who's involved in something that's just darkness. Then we can go there because there's Krishna service, Krishna's pleasure there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.